Okay, we're in Acts chapter 27. We're almost done with the book of Acts. We're going to get through this chapter tonight. And I'm going to read, actually, from Wayne Jackson's commentary for a minute, just kind of summarize the chapter, because this is Paul's shipwreck. Do you have that? Can you pop that up on the screen? I just made a map. If you still have your booklet, there's a map. But there'll be some explanation to it. Did you get that from the... Okay, maybe if it gets lighter and we get darker, you'll be able to see it. But this is the journey. He's leaving Jerusalem down here, actually Caesarea, because he had been taken up to Caesarea from Jerusalem, you remember. Actually by an army that was protecting him because of the plot to kill him by some of the Jews. And if you'll follow that map as we go through this chapter, you'll be able to, it'll explain where they're going to. That he gets on a ship, of course, he's supposed to go to Rome. He's supposed to appear before Caesar after he's seen Felix and Festus and Agrippa. And it's the fall of the year. It's after September. It was the most dangerous time to travel, really, with the winds. And so you can see how they attempted to stay along the coastal line. And when they got down here to the island of Crete and the Fair Havens, there was a question about whether or not they were going to stay over the winter in that place, but it wasn't a good place to winter. So they were headed towards that Phoenix, which was just right above there. But what happened was a nor'easter came. A nor'easter blew them away from that island. They would have gone up towards Achaia and cut across, and they ended up out in the middle of the ocean, and that's when they were in trouble. And because of that, they almost all lost their lives. So, but you'll, with that map up there, as I'm reading, it'll make more sense to you. Makes me ask this question, though. What is the worst trip you ever took? The worst trip. You ever been on a plane or on a train or in a car? And it was just a disaster. You ever had one of those? Anyone want to share? I've got one to share. I want to hear someone. The worst trip you ever took. Bananas on the wing? the air. Yeah, I've had a couple of those. Anybody got a good one? A bad one? a good story about a bad trip that you wish? Yeah, that's depressing. We learned something 14 years ago, in December last year. It would have been 14 years ago. December the 23rd. I was 10 years after my first major surgery, 10 days after my first major surgery, December 13th, for cancer, and taking my thyroid out and everything like that. And I was going to brave overcoming that and still make it to Amber's family for Christmas in Paducah. And my parents had come to visit. They had flown in from California, and they were going to go from Nashville. We met them in Nashville, had a little Christmas time together in Nashville, and we all stayed in a hotel. And they were going to go to Arkansas to see my grandparents. And we were going to leave. It was me and my wife and Luke, who was 3, and Daniel, who was 6 months. And we were going to leave from Nashville and drive to Paducah. No big deal. But a big winter storm came. And you may remember that one, because we don't get that many. We decided we were going to try and drive to Paducah. My parents sent a rental car to Arkansas. Well, we got to Clarksville, and it was rough sledding. It took us about 3 hours to get from Nashville to Clarksville, so you get an idea. Of course, it's December the 23rd at that point, so we're trying to get there for Christmas. And we got to Clarksville, we got some gas, and we went to the 6880 interchange on the Kentucky side, if you know where that is, and that's when it became a parking lot. And we were there in that exact spot for 4.5 hours in the snow. And it was about 10 to 15 degrees. And the good thing, we had some gas because we could still run the motor and keep the kids warm. We had a baby in the car. But we didn't get there until 9 p.m. that night. So we were out there 12, 15 hours just trying to get from Nashville to Paducah. That's not very far. And we passed cars in the dark that were parked right in the middle of the interstate. People had just abandoned them. There were people, it was just a frenzy of problems. There were people that were having heart events on, that it was stacked for about 100 miles or something like that. I don't know how bad it was, but it was bad. In the meantime, my mom and dad had flipped the car, hitting a bridge, and rolled it three times in the snow. And we called my parents to check on them, and they were actually literally upside down in the car when we called them, and my dad's only cell phone had been thrown out into the snow, and because my wife called him, it lit up. So he was able to crawl out and find it so he could call an emergency person to come pick them up. Anyway, here's the moral of the story, and this is part of the moral of this story. Just wait till the weather's better. Wait till the weather is better, and if you're late for Christmas, who cares? We have decided we're never going to try to do that again to fight the weather. And what happens really in this situation is there's someone who owns a boat who has it full of wheat, and they're going to get a payday. And Paul happens to board that ship from Alexandria on the way to Rome, and he says, we really don't need to travel in this weather. But he couldn't convince them to keep from going. So if you're in Acts chapter 27, while I read this commentary, because it's a summary commentary, follow along in the verses, starting in verse 1, and you'll see kind of where we're going. In this chapter are the herring details of Paul's voyage to Rome. What's the significance of this narrative as it relates to the book as a whole? I mean, it's really interesting that an entire chapter of the Bible is dedicated to what happened on the boat. Sir William Ramsay noted, "The record is highly important as illuminating the character of Paul, showing how even as a prisoner and a landsman at sea, he became the dominating personage in a great ship's company as soon as danger threatened." And it also draws the reader's attention to the central and critical importance of the scene towards which it leads up, the trial of Paul in Rome. The details of the voyage of the shipwreck of Paul have been minutely investigated by competent scholars. These studies establish that Luke, though not a professional seaman, was a close and accurate observer of the winds and storms and the management of the movements of the ship. He furnishes more information on ancient navigation in chapters 27 and 28 than any single document of antiquity. The ship had other prisoners on board. A centurion named Julius was in charge of these. Paul had two friends accompanying him, Luke and Aristarchus from Thessalonica. The ship sailed northward along the coast, stopping at Sidon, some 60 miles away. Again, you can also follow the map as I'm reading this to you. Julius allowed Paul to go ashore where friends gave him attention. He may have been ill. The ship sailed northward, then westward on the north side of Cyprus, sheltered from the winds. Finally, they landed at Myra, which was a grain port on the southern coast of Lycia in Asia Minor. Here they changed ships, catching a vessel from Alexandria headed for Italy. It contained 276 passengers, according to verse 37. After many days, they came near Cnidus, about 100 miles west of Myra. The winds were strong, and they were forced to turn southward, where they obtained some protection from the mountainous island of Crete. They struggled around the eastern promontory and along the southern coast till they came to Fair Havens. Now, when they get to Fair Havens, that's when the decision is being made about whether or not they're going to continue to go. Because when you see it up there, so far they've had a lot of coastal protection, but they've got to get over to Italy. They're going to have to go across the ocean at some point, and they've got to figure out whether or not that's a wise decision to make at this time of year. The ship remained at Fair Havens for a while, but it was an open harbor and it was dangerous to winter there, yet it was hazardous to go forward. It was the well-known dangerous season. A meeting was conducted to determine what to do, to which Paul, with his sailing experience, was invited. Paul urged the ship's owner or captain not to venture forward, but his advice was ignored. They would attempt to reach Phoenix, 40 miles to the west, which would afford better winter protection. So the idea is they're really not even trying to get to Rome immediately. They would have been happy just to get up to Phoenix and spend a couple of months there if need be, but they got blown out to sea. As they sailed off, a fierce wind roared down out of Crete's mountainous region. The ship could not be guided, and they were forced to turn to the southwest and ride with the force of the storm. They ran under the protection side of a small island, Cauda. Now, that is not on this map. But it is on the map that's in your books, if you have your books still. It's that island provided some relief, allowing them to secure a lifeboat and strengthen the ship by winding ropes around the hull. Now we're in verses 16 and 17. As they fought the storm, they became fearful of sinking and began to throw cargo overboard, and later even pieces of the ship's furniture. They saw neither sun nor stars for days, and all hope of surviving was lost. Paul reminded them that he had warned them not to venture forward as they had. Doubtless he was preparing them for further instruction out of his rich sea experience. Their lives depended on heeding his advice. They had gone a good while without food and were sore discouraged, but God's apostle had good news. An angel of the Lord had stood by him and told him to stop being afraid. Verses 23 and 24. You will appear before Caesar, and God will give you the lives of all that sail with you. Paul declared that he had every confidence that this prophecy would be realized. There was a footnote, however. The ship would be lost, and they would be cast upon an island. Verse 26. There is but one significant island between southern Sicily, the toe of Italy's boot, and northern Africa, and that is Malta, or Miletus. This small island is only 17 by 9 miles. What are the odds of predicting that the ship would be thrust upon this tiny island in that vast sea? For 2 weeks, the ship had been driven to and fro more than 470 miles from Crete to Malta. Finally, there was a suspicion that land was near, so the sailors sounded. That means they threw a lead weight with a line attached into the water and measured the depth. The water was about 120 feet deep. After a while, they measured again and were obviously closer. They began to fear that they would be swept into a rocky coast and killed, so they dropped four anchors from the stern to stabilize the vessel. In the dark, some of the crewmen decided to attempt to escape by letting down a rowboat. Paul discovered the plot and reported it to the soldiers, warning, except they remain in the ship, they could not be saved. Verse 31. Their salvation from this danger would not occur unless they heeded Paul's inspired instruction. And there is a principle here to be mastered. The escape plan was thus foiled. The passengers had not eaten substantially for 14 days, and they were weak, so Paul encouraged them to take nourishment, promised not one of them would die. Verse 34. As a token of the confidence of his message, Paul took some bread and gave public thanksgiving to God, and he himself ate. His courageous example was effective as others took food and embraced hope, a commentary on how Paul's influence had grown with these souls. As it dawned, they saw a beach and attempted to go for it, casting cargo overboard, cutting the rear anchors, and raising a foresail to catch the wind. They were swept forward but became stuck in the sand prematurely, and the ship began to break up. Some soldiers recommended killing the prisoners lest they escape, but Julius, desiring to save Paul, prevented such. Other prisoners lived because of Paul. A bond had clearly formed between captain and captive. The apostle was a powerful personality. The order to abandon the ship was given. Some swam to shore, others floated on planks, and others came from the ship. All escaped, not a soul perished. Verse 44. The prophecy was fulfilled, Paul was vindicated, and God was glorified. So that was a pretty good summary. Yes. I was not reading directly from the text. I'm in chapter 27, Acts 27. I was reading a commentary on the text that kind of gave a summary of it. But we're going to go over a few points from chapter 27. Okay, so what things are to learn in a chapter that basically just talks about how a ship sails and how things are happening as that is coming along? Have you ever been in a situation where you were thinking that you might die? Have you ever been in a situation where you thought that you might die? Okay, you can share that with me if you want. I'm trying to get some really good stuff. Good material. I figured you guys got some good stories. Give me a situation where you thought you might die. Okay, go you'll go and then over here, buddy. Yeah, did you guys hear what he was saying? Or could you hear that over there? So that's. Some of you have experienced that, not just Buddy, but some maybe others have experienced that when something is wrong and you're not sure if it's going to get right. That's a scary thing. So there's we can have health scares. Anyone else? Someone else had one? Rini? Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, I remember. So sepsis is a serious, serious thing, and a lot of people, most people don't survive it, really. So, yeah. Yeah. That's right. Sepsis is so, so scary. When you get infection all over your body and your organs, it's hard to turn that around. Morgan? Yeah. Did you get shocked? Did they shock you? Did they, what are those things called? The fib paddles? Yeah. Anybody else want to share one? The reason, yes, go ahead. Yeah, Vietnam. When you were getting fired on? Yeah. So the reason why I'm bringing these things up is what is going through your mind when those things are happening, because you kind of get a flavor of what's going on here, and Paul's trying to encourage these people. Paul was calm. Paul seemed pretty calm, didn't he? Of course, he had a message from God, and that helped to encourage him. But Paul's calmness had a whole lot to do with his relationship with God. He's the one who wrote, "For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain." So, you know, our view of death is different when we're children of God, even in a situation in which we are scared because of the reality of what may be taking place. But I guess my question is, what type of things go on in your mind when you're going in through that process? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. 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 Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things I think we come to terms with, our mortality, and we also consider our relationship with the Lord, and we want that to be in the right place. I think that definitely goes through our mind. What else could go through your mind? There are other things, maybe non-spiritual things, that are just human things. Okay, getting your effects in order. Hezekiah was told, wasn't he? Set your house in order. You shall die and not live. So that's another thing we think about. If we're ready, if our family is ready, other things going on in our mind. You know, notice this. Look at verse 19 and also look at verse 38. What were some of the things that they decided to do to try and avoid the loss of the ship? Priorities change in a crisis. Or at least, maybe we should put it this way. Priorities are realized in a crisis. What really matters? When your whole life is about to end, or things are crashing down on you, things that you think are so important, not so important. Notice in verse 38, it says they threw the wheat overboard. See, that was the money maker. That was the reason why that captain wanted to sail, because that was going to be what the purpose of his voyage was. Paul's whole deal was he was trying to get to Rome. There's another lesson in that. Everybody's on the ship for a different reason. Everyone's got a different reason to try and get where they're trying to go. But being paid doesn't matter so much if you can't enjoy it, if you're going to be dead anyway. But priorities become apparent in a time of crisis. Here's another lesson, I think, from this. Verse 15. Go back to even verse 14. Not long after a tempestuous headwind arose called Euryclidon. And some say, if you look at your, it says a nor'easter. Now, when we were at the Boston Marathon this year, we were told that it was a nor'easter coming. And if you don't know it, you have to run right into that. And we, you know, a lot of people just decided they'd drop out. You know, I think all the people that paid to go and paid for their hotel and everything thought they might as well go ahead and brave it. But all the elite runners, half the elite runners, they just dropped out. But some winds don't need to be fought. Some winds are too strong to fight. And sometimes we probably should do things a little bit more wisely. They had made the decision. Look at verse 13. When the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their desire, they put out to sea. What does that mean? That was the proverbial calm before the what? And they thought, they got confident. Sometimes we make our biggest mistake when we decide we want to do something and we're looking for a sign, and they misread the sign. Have you ever misread a sign because you wanted something to happen so much that you were looking for any inkling from God that that was what you needed to do, and so you just jumped into it? And that's kind of what they did. So, and some, once that big wind blew, they couldn't fight against it. They had to just, notice it says that they just had to let her drive, verse 15. The ship wasn't going to be able to go up against that wind. Some other things we see here is the way that Paul is viewed by the people in the boat. There are different people in the boat with different purposes, like we mentioned. You have Julius. What's Julius's job? He's the centurion. What's his job? Get Paul to Rome, and also there are other prisoners, so what's supposed to happen there? None of the prisoners are supposed to go free. Look there at the end of the chapter. It says the soldiers' plan, verse 42, was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. So there's a melee here, and everyone's just jumping off the boat at this point. And the people that are working for the government, so to speak, they have another whole thing to be worried about. I mean, what has happened in the book of Acts already when prisoners were let free or they escaped? The people that were holding them were put to death. All right, so they had to think about two different ways in which they could die. First, we have to get off the ship, but we also have to kill the prisoners first, lest they have escaped. Notice Julius stops that from happening. He doesn't let him kill the prisoners, because Paul had gained his trust. And it goes to show you that you can make friends with people who might otherwise be against you if you treat them in the right way. And Paul was able to influence these people. Do you think that part of this story, and you get to chapter 28, and you see Paul's on the island of Malta, and we'll get to this next week, and remember they decide to build a fire, and he puts his hand and gets some wood, and what happens when he goes to get some wood to gather for the fire? He's bitten by a snake, and the natives there know what kind of snake that is. What they understand is you get bit by a snake like that, you die. So they were just kind of looking at Paul, waiting for him to die. And he didn't die. And then they supposed he was some type of God. You know, they were not probably followers of Jehovah God. They had their own ideas of mysticism and mythological gods and things like that. Maybe they thought Paul was one. But what happened to Paul on that occasion, and what's happening here when Paul's receiving a vision, don't you see that God is working in this to perhaps find another way to be effective with the message? And I think that happened a lot in the first century, that things happen in a certain way with the people of God so that their message can be believed by the people in their area of influence. So I guess I want to encourage you to believe that God is working in your life. If you are faithful to Him like Paul was, and you believe in His promises, and you listen to His word, I want you to believe that God may be working in your life for people that are non-believers, so that the things that are happening to you might work out, as Paul said in Philippians chapter 1, for the furtherance of the gospel. So I think there might be something to that as well, and that's one of the reasons why this is shared. Okay, here's another principle. Verses 34 through 36. I'm not going to give this one to you. You give it to me. You look at verses 34 through 36. What's the principle in that? What's the lesson? And I think a spiritual application. You've got to recharge. You've got to eat to be strong. Right? Paul says you're going to have to get some energy so you could swim ashore. You haven't been eating for 2 weeks, basically. So this is about time In order for you to make it, for you to survive, you're going to have to be strong. And the only way you're going to be strong is if you are healthy. How is that provided also a spiritual application? Yeah. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds of the mouth of God. And when Jesus is saying that, and he's quoting the Old Testament, but he's been tempted to look at the physical sustenance, and he says there is a spiritual sustenance that is much more important. We are not going to make it through the different struggles that we have in life unless we feed regularly upon the Word of God. And we have to be ready for that swim to safety, if you will. Now, if you don't have a plan in place when a crisis is going to happen, you're probably not going to be very successful at that moment. One of the things that we're trying to teach our children, and I think Chase does a really good job of this, is to try and look into the future about possible things that you're going to be met with in the short term. What are some of the things that teenagers are met with that they're going to be looking at in the next 5 to 10 years? Because I tell them that the decisions that they make over the next 5 and 10 years, once they get to be, you know, teenagers, are pretty much going to determine what's going to happen to them for the next 40 years. So what are some of the things that they need to be ready for? Bill? Sure, that, I mean, we all have that at every level, but I think there's a need to belong when you're becoming of age. You know, you want to understand who you are, you know, where what place you have in the world. So I think it's harder on them. What are some other things do you think these folks, these young people are having to deal with that they have to be prepared for? Temptations? Yeah. Paul said to Timothy, flee youthful lusts. And I don't think that that means that temptation ends when we get older. But I think it does point out the fact that there are some things that we care a whole lot about when we're 15, 20, 25, that almost dominate our thinking, that are not as persuasive later on. Now, we'll have our own problems later with other struggles that we deal with, but there are some youthful lusts, very carnal lusts, that I think our young people deal with, just in the fact that they're coming of age and the way the body changes and the struggles that they deal with. Yeah. 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 Yeah, one of the best bulletin boards that's ever been on the walls of this church was the one we had over there in the fellowship building for a while that basically said, I'm paraphrasing it, you are who your friends are. That's very true. You know what I was thinking about the other night? I don't know what you did for New Year's Eve. I don't even know if you stayed up until midnight. I will admit, I'm pretty sure that I have seen in every year. But we went to bed at 12:02. But I was thinking about the way that people celebrate New Year's Eve around the world and who they're with and where they are determine how they celebrate it, you know. And there are many times that I think being a Christian is so completely different than being in the world. I think about that every Saturday night because people do a lot of things on Saturday night. Me as a preacher, I'm looking over my notes, you know, and my wife has kind of been a widow to Saturday nights because of my particular occupation. But I always think about that on Saturday night, not always, but often. What are other people doing with their Saturday nights? That doesn't make me better than anybody else. My occupation demands that I think about those things on a Saturday night. But, you know, who we are is very much determined by who we associate with. And we are supposed to prefer one another, the Bible says. We should want to be with Christians more than we would want to be with anyone else. But it doesn't mean we wouldn't influence the world. Was that the second bell or the first? Okay, let me see if I have anything else here that I wanted to share. Yeah. Human anchors always fail, but Paul's anchor was in Christ. See, that's why you all missed Clarence teaching class. That's the best thing anybody said all night. That was really good. You know, Hebrews chapter 6, if Paul wrote it, We have an anchor, both sure and steadfast, that enters the presence behind the veil. Our anchor is in Christ. And, you know, we are going to be on a, we're all on a journey. We're all trying to get to heaven. And there are going to be some struggles along the way. But if we put our faith and hope in God, we will not lose our lives. We may lose a lot of other things along the way. We may lose things that we thought were important, that we needed to cling to along the way. But we're not going to take any of that stuff with us anyway. The only thing that matters is that we get to our final destination. All right, thank you all for being here tonight. We'll look at chapter 28 and finish out the book of Acts next Wednesday.